My name is Megan Van Alstyne, and I am a working artist in Albany, New York. I work in a wide range of mediums, ranging from fiber arts to sculpture. I am formally trained as a mold maker. I studied at the Museum School of Fine Arts and have been working through a variety of practices for over 15 years now.
And what does a day in an artist look like? A lot of people have misconceptions of how artists fill their day and how much work goes into it. So could you walk through some of the different ways that you would spend a day being an artist?
Yeah, I mean, for myself, I consider myself a working artist, and I do really mean that in the truest sense. I do work, 40 hours a week and sometimes more. And I think what it means to be a working artist is really different from artist to artist. But for me, I have the added advantage of I also am an arts administrator for a nonprofit cultural arts organization. So I spend a lot of my time working collectively with other artists to help create stage productions for a nonprofit theater organization. And that is the bulk of my weekly work time. But for myself as an individual artist, I do try and maintain a daily practice at my home studio. My house is more studio than it is house at this point. And so when I do get done with my daily work, I then go back to work in my studios. Anything from exercises to hone and maintain my skill sets that I've cultivated over the years, doing drawings and illustrations to the more fun parts of it, which is kind of creativity and experimentation, where you get to play with materials or kind of fantasize about projects and plan out how those might unfurl and, the skills that you need or the materials you need to secure or who else you might want to work with collaboratively as an artist. And even during this pandemic time, which has been really, complicated and difficult for a lot of people, I do a kind of private closed Zoom studio session once a week with a few other artist friends of mine. That's really low stakes. We kind of just turn our cameras on in our workspaces and work together distantly, remotely, which has been actually really nice and created a sense of community that I was really lacking with the quarantine, where we kind of work quietly. But if someone has a question or needs input on a piece of that they're working on and are struggling with, we can still have that sense of community and talk to each other and take a look at their painting or drawing and say, oh, well, what if you tried this? So we do that once a week with a few friends that I like to collaborate with. And that's been frankly, really, really wholesome and rewarding during the pandemic. Yeah.
One thing that you mentioned that I think is really interesting is being an artist often has a lot to do with self-discipline. And so you mentioned that you work the 40-hour work week and then you go home and you do your own art practice that is not then your 40-hour work week. So could you talk a little bit about the discipline that goes into being an artist?
I think that I'm a little more laissez-faire than some people. Everyone has their own practice, but I think that it is quote unquote a practice for a reason, and that you do have to return to it repeatedly to help push yourself through concepts or have some periods of introspection. So what it means, to return to your practice on a daily basis doesn't necessarily mean doing drawing exercises every day, although some people like to do that. I do it periodically to make sure that I'm still kind of staying fresh with the aesthetic that I like to achieve. But having your daily discipline can also be about reading materials that keep you inspired or doing research. And I do try and do that on a daily basis. And I know people like to call it a discipline, but it's also something that I really love. So it doesn't feel like work as much as it does making time and space for something that really truly brings me joy and satisfaction or excitement or interest. So when you do spend a whole day doing the hard work that we do as citizens, going home and returning to your discipline is, I think, fulfilling and rewarding and very necessary for myself to feel accomplished and whole as an artist and as a person.
So it completes you. And how has this practice, or you said not practice, but now I'm not trying to use practice. So how has being an artist changed the way that you see the world?
even when I was a little kid, I was always really sensitive to the world around me. And I think at points it was, at one point I was a very shy kid, and it was really hard for me to process certain things and feelings. And so making this sort of a meditative routine as part of my life has helped me exponentially to kind of create my own narrative and vernacular, to work through maybe some of my own barriers, and to be able to think critically and reflectively is, I think, a part of that routine that's super important to me. And that when you do spend time cultivating those skills in yourself, not just as a creative, but as an individual, that you get to be much more comfortable with your own vulnerability and much more open to the diversity of everybody's kind of worldview and life experience. And that I think that's exponentially important to my growth into my adulthood and how I continue to grow and change as somebody who is a part of a community and society, and what those skill sets have cultivated have really changed the way that I have experienced the arts and what they mean to me and what they mean to a community. So I think that it's something that everybody can benefit from, however they choose to implement that practice or routine or discipline in whatever medium. But those particular experiences of, you know, self-reflection, insight, understanding, and critical thinking have been deeply impactful for me.
So innerly, it's very important. And how are artists important outwardly, generally in society?
I think that the arts in general are really important to society on so many different levels, you know, on the more kind of foofy spiritual cosmic level, when you're talking about that kind of like personal introspection and development, to the intellectual when you're talking about critical thinking and analyzing and understanding and critiquing or breaking down the way certain things work in your society, lofty concepts of understanding why things are the way they are, maybe how they could be if they were different. That you learn skill sets which become technical that can be transmuted throughout, you know, your career and community experience. And then it goes from macro to micro into, you know, economics, careers. And so I think that being part of that community is incredibly rewarding and stimulating in so many different ways. You know, the cultural arts can be a conduit for social change. They're a great access point for people to engage in your community, or especially around topics that might be hard to understand or frankly stuff that people aren't interested in. A lot of art projects give people access points in ways to think about environmentalism or social justice in ways that maybe traditional academic or journalistic approaches feel really overwhelming or invasive to people, whereas the arts can create more fluid ways to think about these things, more accessible points for people of different communities or language skill sets, or all backgrounds of diversity can engage in the arts and access this type of communal thought process and engagement in ways that are frankly creative and exciting. And in that way, it can be a real spark to social change and community expansion.
If we had better arts funding and arts curriculum, would it result in better scientists, teachers, athletes, politicians? What would you say to how other people who aren't necessarily designers or artists benefit from the arts?
So there was an article that was published in Forbes magazine this past July that was specifically on the subject of arts and sciences together, and I'll be happy to share that link with you. Essentially, what they talk about, the article was written by Anna Powers, I believe, that they talk about art and science and the integration or overlap between the two. we think about abstract notions in science. They're formulas, hard to understand concepts, and really kind of obtuse ideas. And when we think about science, we think of it as being kind of like sterile and mathematical and rigid. But the fact of the matter is that you have to have a creative mind that is willing to explore things that are impossible or unknown, and that you need creativity to have scientific exploration. And the quote that I found that really resonated with me was that she wrote in her article, said, "The reason why art is necessary to science is because creativity involves imagination, and imagination is visualization. Things we are able to conceptualize, visualize, or imagine in our mind are the things we can also create if we have the tools to do so." So I think it's a really poignant quote that she had in her article, because you have to be able to dream big to make those types of scientific achievements. And a lot of scientific achievement has come through creative exploration, and you achieve that through exploring the creative process through the arts. And I think that that's something that's only going to foster ingenuity, and field-breaking innovation comes from creativity.
Yeah. I mean, that was a really good point. And a lot of what has been designed in science, we thought would have been unbelievable shortly before it was created.
Right. I mean, people, thought that things like outer space and black holes were impossible, right, fantastical things. But somebody was able to be creative enough and think big enough and, to create something insane and crazy and wild. And it actually, and that set the forefront of those frontiers of scientific exploration came from somebody being creative. And I think that if we stop and fail to facilitate and foster creative and critical thinking, then we're going to lose our edge on innovation.
And you said earlier that you being an artist has also helped you to make mistakes, wasn't that it?
Oh, for sure.
So I feel like that's also very much a part of innovation, of design, of science.
If you gave up every time you did something stupid or ugly or boring or dumb, you wouldn't get anywhere. You have to make a lot of bad art to make some good art. And I'm assuming that the scientific process also includes a lot of failure. But you can't succeed without failure, generally speaking.
And we're hopefully we're getting out of this COVID-19 pandemic right now. And so I think many people are arguing that we put even more investment into the maths and the sciences, and assuming that would be taking away funding from the arts. What kind of an argument would you give to keep or increase the arts funding as also a survival for our future?
I mean, I think that there's a lot of different levels to the impact of funding the arts here. You know, when you talk about arts education and things like sciences, that again, critical thinking, fine motor skill development, those are all skill sets that are really needed, on the nitty gritty of why studying the arts is impactful. There's plenty of research that shows kids who study music excel in math, that sculpture and drawing can help doctors and surgeons excel at fine motor skills that they need to do really imperative surgeries that save people's lives. But ultimately, the arts industry is an industry. And I think that people tend to forget that. And there has been multiple studies that were issued through the Americans for the Arts that show that just the nonprofit cultural arts sector, so not the for-profit, but the nonprofit cultural arts sector, which is the sector that the government invests in heavily, that those funds are going deep into our communities. So if you're talking about the impacts on an economic level of what happened through the COVID pandemic, the nonprofit cultural arts industry in all 50 states generates $166.3 billion in arts spending related around arts events. which means not only are people, you know, spending money to go to the theater and the symphony and to see concerts and rock shows, but they're employing hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, that the people who attend those events go out to bars and restaurants before their event. They pay for parking. They hire people to, you know, work these events. So they're exponential. And also these types of nonprofit cultural arts organizations are much more likely to work with small businesses, brick and mortar Main Street, that everybody wants to see thrive. They're more likely to put those funds into the pockets of those independent business owners. They're more likely to hire people locally in their own communities. And that those government funds that are going into these organizations go deep, deep, deep into those communities and outwards into education, into all sorts of different industries, because of that, the arts industry is actually quite booming in America. So I think the argument to reduce funding is really short-sighted, because it's not just about arts education and museums staying open and things like that, but it's actually it's robbing economic potential, because not only do the cultural arts sector put monies back into the community, it yields tourism, which generates more income. It creates sustainable communities where maybe other industries would not thrive or are desirable to places like tech or oil or other industries like that. So it's an opportunity for communities to kind of take control of their cultural value and cultural equity in a way that is exciting and thrilling and invigorating and stimulating mentally, spiritually, and financially.
And you mentioned the local economy, and you're based in Albany, and you grew up in Kinderhook, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm born and raised.
So can you give some examples of how you've seen the arts be really beneficial to the Albany area?
I think in the greater region, there's things like SPAC that generate an incredible amount of work and tourism. There's the New York City Ballet comes up to Saratoga and it does a lot of their rehearsals up there. There is wonderful events that are street festivals that involve the arts in Albany. The New York State Museum is a beautiful staple that not only is that facility a museum, but it's actually also a research facility. So it's not only just creating, you know, interesting stimulus for the community, but there's a lot of research that gets conducted out of that facility, ranging from archaeological to ethnographic, even some mycology and geology studies. All of that is stimulated around the New York State Museum there and a lot of the funding that goes through. There has been huge booms, whether they're controversial or not, like the Jack Shaneman Gallery that has come into Kinderhook that has provided, frankly, a really interesting and exciting access to contemporary art that the region really never had before. There are programs like Art Oh My. I worked for them for a number of years that have international artists mixed with community artists that do all sorts of dance, writing, visual arts, sculpture installation, with educational outreach programs for kids in the community, especially for public schools that don't necessarily have a huge amount of resource. Those types of institutions allow for community members to engage and participate and for kids to get interesting and exciting education. The New York State Museum has an after-school program that kids can go every day of the week after school and get help with their homework and learn about science and art and other exciting things that are going to help bolster their understanding of their formal education. So absolutely, there is actually a depth and breadth to the cultural arts in this region, from all the way up through the Hudson Valley to the tri-state area, that range from the culinary arts to dance to music to theater performances. And I think it's a really integral staple to our community and the vibrancy that is our region up here.
How easy is it to make a living as an artist? I mean, that's really hard to answer because, like, who is an artist and in what capacity? But when we talk about institutions being funded, are individual artists really able to live off of being an artist?
That, I mean, I think that's going to be a really big and deep and complicated conversation, because it also depends on what you define as being a working artist. Is it somebody who solely exists on just the creation of making paintings or being a stage dancer? You know, working for the arts is complicated. I've been a dedicated steward of the arts for over 15 years, but it does mean that my existence as an artist and an arts administrator are deeply intertwined, that I do exhibitions and lectures and those types of aspects that are, you know, framed within, you know, the academic canon and the, you know, more idealized arena of being a working artist. But I also work for a lot of community organizations and volunteer projects. And that's, I think, also a big part for me as a working artist, to be immersive in my community. But somebody else's career path as a working artist could be very diverse. Generally speaking, it is often said in the nonprofit cultural arts center that it is a labor of love, that those organizations tend to be underfunded and excel through the dedication of the people who volunteer and work for those organizations. So I actually think that it's truly amazing for some of the organizations that I have worked with, for such little funding, how much impact they generate. And if they had ample funding for the resources that they need, I could only fantasize about the incredible impact that these organizations could have by having more access to resource and wages to hire more people. I would only imagine that the impact of those cultural arts organizations would grow exponentially with additional funding and support. But it's a complicated conversation about what it means to be a quote unquote working artist and what it means to be vested and part of the cultural arts organizations and network. But yes, it is possible. A lot of people are always, I currently am an arts administrator for the Berkshire Opera Festival. Everyone is shocked that I work all year round. I work more than I could possibly explain to you. It's actually a lot of work for a production that only goes on in the summertime. I work 52 weeks out of the year, all year round. And we actually employ from start to finish, we contract over 120 artists and artisans, from costume to orchestra to vocal. And then there's our full-time administrative staff. And we're actually a really fairly, you know, small to mid-sized nonprofit. And we have that many people that we're integrating with all year round. Yes, it's totally possible to have a career in the arts, and what it means to have a career in the arts is a very complicated conversation, but it is possible.
Have I missed anything that you feel like needs to be included in this conversation?
I think that ultimately, like, there's a lot of dialogue that we all want to have about, you know, your ROI, your return on investment, and that the government's investing in all of these things. You know, are the cultural arts, you know, a good return on investment? And I would say that exponentially, yes, the impact of investing in the cultural arts and in artists individuals, it has so many different powerful impacts that we've gone through, from education to bolstering and stimulating things like sciences and education for children, to community impact and cultural institutions. Those are all really important. But at the end of the day, the arts are really important because they are our cultural identity. And in times of great distress, like we've been experiencing, where all of our natural lives have been kind of upturned and spun around, and it feels scary and isolating, and that people are missing their sense of community and their kinship, the arts are one of the most powerful ways to preserve and invigorate and maintain our own cultural narratives and community identities. And that I mean, for centuries, one of the most poignant tactics that war criminals have done to strip a community of their power is to target their arts, their icons, to break down and ban their creative vernacular because it stripped those communities of their identity. So more than anything, we need the arts because it's fulfilling and important to maintaining our sense of well-being and health and the growth of our communities on a really holistic level. So we can talk about this return on investment by investing in artists and investing in the arts on a macro to micro, but ultimately investing in the arts is important because it makes us feel good. It gives us a sense of identity. And without that, we're all kind of lost. And so investing in our artists and in our communities is going to be investing in our well-being.
That was a lot of really, really good information.
Awesome. I'm so glad I could share it with you. Thank you for thinking of me.
Thank you, Megan Van Alstyne, for speaking with me.
It was a pleasure. Have a good evening, Sina. Thanks again.